Welcome to Day Zero Update for September 3rd, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkin.
Yeah, two-man crew this week. We still got plenty of news, though not too much that's huge here. More of the fall release calendar is unveiling ahead of us. So we got a bunch of stuff to look forward to here, including some hardware. So we'll talk about that stuff here. We had a Nintendo Direct just for Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
Yep.
So we got to see exactly what that game is. And it is weird. We can confirm that. Let's see. We got some Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2 news that is positive. So there's that. And then we got negative news about a big historic studio in the gaming industry getting shut down abruptly. We'll talk about that and more. So before we get to that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. I'll kick it off here. I've been playing some of the Making of Karateka, the Digital Clips sort of documentary game about Jordan Mechner's early career.
Yeah. Does it also have like a copy of Karateka that you can actually play?
Yeah, it's got five of them.
Good.
It's got, I believe, at least a prototype version of it that Jordan made. Initially, it's called Jordan's Prototype. Then it's got the Apple II version, like the Commodore 64 version, and the Atari 8-bit computer version.
All right.
Plus a reimagined new version.
Yeah, I played that last one. Yeah, it came out years afterwards. It's not bad, you know.
Well, no, not that. It's a brand new reimagine. Not the Ubisoft one.
Alrighty.
So, yeah, it's made by Mike Mica and a couple others at Digital Clips and sort of trying to modernize some things about it and make it a make it sort of the idealized version of the classic game, as well as there's commentary for that game, which is the sort of commentary where you move up, it stops and lets, you know, plays, you know, him talking about, you know, this aspect of the game or that aspect of the game kind of thing. So it's not the thing you want to do initially to experience it for the first time, but explains, you know, a lot of the thoughts that went into it, trying to remaster it in a way that nobody else really had at that point.
Yeah.
So we got like the Ubisoft remake from the PSN XBLA version. That was pretty neat. It was a sort of more original reimagining.
Yeah, I'm looking at some screenshots. It looks like it sticks much closer to the original game and its original visual style.
Yeah. So that's a very cool thing. It also has goals to it that are for each of the acts. So it has some like extra stuff to do, and like a lot of the trophies and achievements for this game are tied to that and the reimagining of his previous game that never officially released, Death Bounce. When you start going through the story stuff, and you know, watching the videos of him and his dad talking about his, you know, how he got into making games and all that kind of stuff. He was absolutely hooked on asteroids. And so at a young age, like 12, 13, was trying to raise money to get an Apple II, which was sort of the first big, sort of consumer PC out there. And, with that, he started making asteroids clones, essentially one just called Asteroids that he sold to a book company, because this was the era where a lot of small companies popped up to be like, hey, we'll publish a game, we'll make games, that's not hard, kind of thing. And they got like a legal threat from Atari being like, stop cloning our games, kind of thing. So that kind of shot that one down. But then he made a game called Asteroid Blaster that sort of changed things a little bit. And then altered that some more to a game called I forget what the second one's called. It's Star Blaster or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where like the instead of the classic style of asteroid ship, it's more of a V essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts work, you know, emailing or not emailing, sending mail to Broderbund, mm-hmm. A classic PC publisher.
Yep.
Of that time, and that was the era where you could just literally send a letter, like, "Hey, I got this cool game, you know, called this. If you want, I can send you a floppy disk with it on there," kind of thing. And he's corresponding back and forth, and you see, I think, four different prototypes for it. As the main hook of it is that you are essentially the asteroid ship, but instead of shooting asteroids, you're shooting these colored balls that are bouncing around on the screen, and you can like look at the correspondence back and forth about like, you know, what's they're not liking about it, what they think he should change and all that kind of stuff as he's making changes throughout. Because initially it was just like one hit, one kill on the balls, and then he created a hierarchy of them changing colors as they go down from, you know, having 1 to 4 hit points, mm-hmm. essentially that kind of stuff, to adding a line on it so that looks, you can tell when it's like rolling around, that kind of stuff. And then the final version that he worked on, you're on like a space train as he's trying to figure out a story. And these are eggs, not balls, of a weird bat bird type creature that kind of fly around in the parts of the ship. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that's how weird stories were at that point. And like, as you kill all the enemies in one part, you know, one car, you have to fly through to the next one, that kind of thing. And so that's kind of what the reimagined game is, though it also adds dual stick, you know, shooting controls to it, that kind of stuff. And you're essentially trying to get to the front of the ship, shoot up the like core reactor, or whatever, at the front of it, and then fly back out. I don't think you have to physically fly back out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like really interesting kind of idea, but also this was like 1983, like 4 years after asteroids hit.
Yeah.
So the amount of asteroids clones that must have been out there, especially that actually released, were probably hundreds at that point on any platform you could find. So at a certain point, I think that final prototype, they, you know, got some testing with some kids and such playing it. Very much like, this is kind of just not the game. You know, it's hard because shooting the mother bird is just kind of weird. You don't necessarily get a great idea of how much, you know, how many shots you need to kill it, kind of thing. And like just the game wasn't quite there. And so they're like, you know, this isn't working. And so he, you know, agrees with that and like starts thinking about other games to work on, some stuff he's had on his background, and sort of dives into a game he's calling Karate at this point that is essentially trying to be like a hardcore karate fighting game.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, this is an era where fighting games don't really exist yet, like mm-hmm. 83, 84. There's maybe some proximity kind of fighting games. Maybe Yi R Kung Fu and some other games like that, but those are more brawlers type stuff.
Yeah.
But he had ideas. You can look through all sorts of notes and such of like, oh, you hit here, you might be able to, you know, cause the enemy to have like a dead leg kind of thing, or break their knee, or that kind of stuff. And obviously kind of moves away from that to the Karateka that, you know, eventually became a whole thing as he inject story in it in a way that nobody had really done, making it a very cinematic game that hadn't really existed up to that point. Because he got invested in the idea of having a cinematic game from like another Broderbund game he played called Choplifter, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
That has some like story to it in a way that he was very impressed by, and it just kind of influenced him. For like the last little bits of Death Bounce he was working on, and then when he started to try to work on something new that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's a really cool collection. A lot of stuff to play, prototypes and such. And yeah, for like some of the Karateka versions that they have here, I kind of wish they had like the NES version that's not good, or the Game Boy version that's not good. The Game Boy version, which has experience in it as a mechanic, for some reason, but I imagine those are probably tied up into weird right stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That might have made that hard, but the versions you do get, they have generally have options of like boosting the frame rate so it's a little smoother, and some stuff like that to make them a little bit better for modern TVs and monitors and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And you do have save states and rewind and all that, so you can kind of cheese your way through it, which is perfectly fine. Those games are not ones that you have to like really fuck around with too much.
Mm-hmm.
It's not super complicated. It's just being like, all right, I got off to a bad start here. I maybe should need to rewind a bit and maybe rethink what I did here, kind of stuff. Especially when you mess up in fights. And yeah, that's where the reimagined version kind of comes into play, kind of spices up the visuals a little bit more while keeping everything there. And yeah, it's a really cool collection. It's only $20. You get essentially two reimagined games, a bunch of prototypes that are all pretty playable. All the prototypes of his Asteroids clones have like leaderboards, not online leaderboards, just local ones, so you can play those for their own sake and all that. So yeah, it's a very cool collection. I hope it does well enough so they can do more of that, because it's a really cool idea, and you get a lot of good story stuff out of it, as you know, they talk about the different versions of the games and all the, because he started working on games like in his freshman year of college as he started at Yale.
Yeah.
And he started keeping a journal at that time, so he's kind of writing down a lot of notes about, you know, how class went, what game stuff he's working on, how things are going, and you know, he's talking about like, oh, I'm fucking up a lot, I'm skipping a lot of classes here, trying to get this done, that kind of stuff, and you know, going back and forth on trying to focus more on school or the game he's working on or whatever. And you get a lot of good story from him and his dad, and see how much they both, you know, have a great relationship, especially since his dad in his own right is kind of an accomplished figure, not even just as part of Karateka's making. Mm-hmm. He's like a concert pianist of some renown, as well as like he has a wiki page for it that at least mentions like three big things that he is known for. Beyond just working on Karateka, mm-hmm. in a way that you're like, oh, this, his dad in his own right is a notable person. Yeah, research psychologist. I think this is the right person. No, this might not be. No, this, I think it says, yeah. Yeah, this is the right one. Yeah, research psychologist. Also, working in technology fields, and also a noted pianist and all that. So yeah, it's kind of a wild thing. Born in Austria, came to the U.S. in 1994 after being in France for 3 years and 2 years in Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, classical concert pianist, portrait painter, and USCF rated chess master. So
mm-hmm.
like kind of a very accomplished person.
Yeah,
especially for being in the middle of Europe during World War II, when all that shit was going down. So yeah, it's very impressive for both of them. So yeah, definitely worth checking out for that. The other game I played is Sea of Stars. I put like 5 hours into this so far.
Mm-hmm.
Liking it so far, though I think it's the start is kind of the slowest bit of it, as it's trying to do a lot of story stuff, setting up as like your It starts with like a narrator of sorts, sort of talking about going through these stories, looking for a particular thing that's been happening, and you know, goes into the story of this game here and kind of dips back in and out a little bit to add some further narration as it goes. But the game itself features these two potential solstice warriors, people born during the solstice, and usually have some elemental thing to them. And the two that you're seeing here that you're playing as are solar and lunar based. So obviously they, you know, the one has silver hair and the other one has gold hair. But you meet two people that are sort of your mentors, I guess, that have red and blue. So I assume fire and water types to them. Maybe, I don't know. I haven't really gone too much into that, but it starts off with you kind of going on this quest. You get like two fights, and then it flashes back to how you got to that point as like kids living on this island where that's sort of supporting the Solstice Warrior stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you two are particularly attuned and sort of just kind of waiting to be able to get to the next step and actually start your training. And they sort of try to get into this forbidden cave, and that sort of leads to them getting, you know, picked to start their training and all that. And you're going through training stuff as it's teaching you the combat and all that, how the combat system works and all that, before you eventually get back to where you were at the beginning of the game. And that is sort of on your first big mission to essentially finish your training to find the Riftmaster, Mistmaster, I forget what the term is for the character you're trying to find on this quest. So, but the combat, I would say, is a bit Chrono Trigger, but also a bit of its own thing. So Chrono Trigger in that you have combos to it, so the sort of combo skill attacks. But that's a meter that fills up based on you dishing damage and taking damage kind of thing. And you get scrolls that add more to your arsenal. It's like right now I have one that's an attack that takes, it's a level one. And I have a level two that heals everybody a bunch. So that's kind of where I'm at on that. But the characters themselves, when you go into fights, you can kind of pick any of the people in your party to start with. It's not like a round-based thing where you have three people, so you get three attacks before the enemies start attacking. It's not like that. You'll see enemies that have little counters on them. That might be, you know, one, two, three. That means how many turns until they get to attack. And turns means how many people attack. So if it's a one, you get one attack to take them out, though you're probably not going to that first time. But yeah, when you do your attacks or trying to deal with enemy attacks, you have a little bit of Paper Mario timing stuff, though I don't think it has the mechanic of, you know, you time it well, you can negate all damage kind of thing. I don't think that's in there. You just sort of limit how much damage you're taking. That can be a great deal in fights if you do it well. But yeah, sometimes enemies will have next to their counter some icons that are attached to the type of attacks you can do. So you need to, if you can attack them with those abilities, you can stop their attack, cancel it out. So those are things that you can do to kind of keep the attacks, you know, from coming at you so much. Because this game does like to throw out, you know, here's two enemies that have, they're going to attack at the same turn. You can only have one person that can attack, you know, one of them. So which one do you want to try to kill off or whatever? So they kind of have a lot of that where they try to tell you, like, getting into a good rhythm, but I have not gotten it to the point where it feels like, say, Chained Echoes, where that's a game where you're really kind of getting into a good rhythm with its combat, with the way that's designed. So this one's not quite that. It's kind of a very busy system, and they're very much telling you that you should use your, you know, your mana skills any chance you can, because if you're just sitting with full mana, you're probably wasting your time, as those can, you know, do extra damage or heal or whatever, because every physical attack you do refills your mana points, so you're kind of expected to kind of go back and forth. But then when they're thrown up, you know, the icons for attacks that it needs, you can get into situations where, like, oh, I just use this character and none of my others can do any of this stuff, kind of situation where you're just going to eat damage just because of the random the timing that it throws that stuff out. You know, that kind of stuff where it gets a little frustrating.
Yeah.
At points. Yeah, so that's it does have an interesting death mechanic where there's no permanent death or anything. If your character gets taken out, lose all their HP, they fall down and they have like stars, you know, rotating around their head, and however many stars that is, that's how many turns that you have to survive to get them back, and then they revive with half health, so you can kind of deal with that in an interesting way. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to keep, you know, special Phoenix Downs to account for that stuff and use turns just for that. So they talk about, like, if that happens, you kind of want to go into like a defensive mode and try to minimize damage you're taking, and dealing with that. So yeah, there's that. And then like the first big mission you do, what you are trying to accomplish is learning a new ability that essentially lets you do, as they say, like, use magic without using magic. And that's a whole other mechanic where when you're doing your physical attacks, these like little light balls pop out of them, and you can essentially do that up to 3 times to whenever you start a person's attack, you kind of hold R2 and push X to pull in one of those balls, up to 3 times to do like a, you know, an extra boost on that attack, kind of thing. So they kind of add that as like that starts to give it a little more rhythm where you're getting more benefit out of the physical beyond just the mana stuff. So yeah, it's a very busy combat system, but it's been pretty manageable so far. I think I've only had one character die, and it's mostly one of those situations where I was running into enemies that, you know, I couldn't get the timing right to kind of deflect their attacks and minimize damage. And they kind of just kept going at one character specifically in a way that was a little frustrating. But, you know, I just survived the next couple of turns, and then they came back, and then we were okay from there. So, yeah, it kind of helps minimize the frustration that stuff has, but it's been pretty fine so far. And yeah, I'm trying to think what else there is. This game has a lot of Uncharted-style climbing and getting around levels. So you kind of run around and climb up onto ledges and climb up on walls and get some areas where you need to jump down to break through like loose ground stuff, to break into like the cavern below. They have a lot of stuff like that throughout the game. So yeah, it's like another thing that kind of sets it apart. You do have a little bit of sneaking stuff for getting, you know, attacks in on enemies while they're not facing you in the field kind of stuff. So yeah, it has a lot of like your traditional JRPG stuff, but also some stuff that kind of sets it apart from your typical sort of indie JRPG. So yeah, it's been pretty good so far. Not sure how long it's going to be, but it seems like it'll go for a while. So yeah, that's Sea of Stars. That's on PlayStation Plus and Game Pass, as well as you can buy it outright on every other platform out there. Switch, PC, PlayStation, Xbox. I think it's $35 if you want to own it outright. So that's one you can check out. The other game I'm playing is Goodbye Volcano High. That came out this week. that is sort of a narrative game. Not really narrative adventure games. There's not really any adventure-y type stuff. You're not really walking around or doing anything.
Yeah.
You're kind of just going from scene to scene. What it does do that breaks up some of that stuff is that you do a lot of performing of music, like a rhythm system.
Yep.
That is maybe kind of Guitaru Man, but not in the way that you have like icons flying in from all over the screen kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of you have these three circles on the bottom of the screen that you just move your left analog stick to the one where some dots are coming in from the screen. So it's kind of all just, is it coming from the left side, the right side, or from the top kind of thing. And while you're doing that, you will have button prompts show up on the screen in sort of a shrinking circle as you get it to hit the point where it, you know, it meets the other circle that's in there for the button prompt kind of thing. You're doing that. And then the last mechanic they have is you're, you have two arrows coming down and you have to push both the left and right stick down when the arrows cross the other arrows that are on the screen. So it's a little bit busy of a rhythm mechanic, but once you start getting it, it's not too bad. But yeah, the game itself, you are playing as this character Fang, who has recently like changed her name. And her parents are not quite up on using it over her birth name.
Yeah.
And I get the impression that they are sort of a maybe a Muslim family, because her birth name is Fatima.
Yeah.
And her brother's name is Nasser. And it's like, oh, I wasn't expecting there to be like racial stuff with the dinosaurs here, because they don't, they obviously don't present as like being brown or anything, because they're dinosaurs. But there are some characters that have like, you know, hair that seems leaning like they're black or white or whatever kind of stuff. But other than that, they're essentially dinosaurs living in like modern times, like our times. But instead of like, say, a climate change catastrophe happening, it's sort of an asteroid that is discovered that is heading into the solar system that potentially may hit the Earth.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And the story is focused around these high school students who are in their senior year and are trying to, you know, survive the rest of the year and get to graduation.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And they don't present the students as being very maybe extreme personality wise, like a Life is Strange has.
Yeah.
Where I was thinking about that, and it's like that was kind of a college prep school of like, here's a bunch of people, you know, who are trying to become professional photographers kind of stuff, getting instruction from, you know, a legend in the field kind of thing. And like, you get a lot of personalities there that are very extreme, outgoing people. But here they're kind of all just students just trying to survive the school year, get to graduation, maybe do whatever is next for them. And the three that you are sort of dealing with, Fang, Reed, and Trish.
Yeah.
I think it's Trish. They are in a band called Worm Drama. You get to learn how they got that name. But they are sort of running into some potential situations where maybe they break up, or maybe they pull together as they get this audition to appear at the local Battle of the Bands that has produced some notable music acts in the past. So they hope that their band can be one of those kind of things. So you're kind of just going through school life as Fang, and talking to her brother, her bandmates, and her friends, and you get some texting chains that you get into, talking to stuff. You get to make some choices about what to, you know, text to them. And yeah, sort of in the wake of the announcement that this asteroid is potentially going to hit the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they, your character kind of gets to look at the internet and see, like, essentially what people are saying on Twitter, which is them talking shit about the asteroid and how convenient it is that, you know, the idea of, like, your parents are like, oh, we lived in a time of great upheaval, and it's like, yeah, well, the asteroid's going to destroy the Earth. Great time we're living in.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing, you know. People being like, oh, this asteroid's just like my ex.
Yeah.
It's going to destroy my life, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
A lot of good shit posting on Twitter, kind of stuff. So they get, they get to some of that kind of internet, always online culture stuff, but I don't think they do it too egregiously. It's kind of metered in pretty well. Though at any point when you pause the game, you can pull up some tweets, though I don't know exactly how they relate to anything that's going on in the game.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, oh, here's some tweets, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't really understand what their purpose is or like adding to the story or anything.
Oh, apparently they get more intense as the asteroid gets closer.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by that.
Mm.
It's just initially it's like, oh, okay. Some people talking about school or whatever, that kind of stuff. But yeah, as you are sort of talking to your friends and your brother, you're kind of getting like relationship points. You see a little icon that pops up anytime you're saying something, you know, nice that adds to your relationship that can lead to you getting some flashback stuff, which is more just some like quick little story bits of like, hey, here's, you know, Fang and her brother, you know, her dealing with his dumb dad jokes that he's told her in the past that she eventually just tells him to shut the fuck up about these jokes. So you get some of that. You get some photos from time to time from just different scenes in the game. So that's neat. The big issue I kind of have with this game is that the trophies are kind of broken.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm at in the game because I have not unlocked any of the trophies for getting through episodes. When I looked at the percentages that people are unlocking them, it's like, oh, this early episode's got the same percentages as the last episode. And I'm like, I don't know that that's, and it was all like 2%, 2.6%, you know, where it's like, nobody's unlocking these really. It's like, oh, these are just busted. Cause like I got a couple of flashbacks and a few photos and I didn't have the trophies for getting your first one of each of those kind of thing. And they have trophies for like, you know, max out your relationship with each of these characters kind of thing. So I assume that they're going to require you to play this maybe a couple of times, which seems like it's not a super long game. It'd be 7-8 hours, depending on what you do in it. But they have, accessibility options for like lengthening timers and that kind of stuff. So you can make that a little bit better for that. So yeah, it's been really good so far. Some nice story stuff. I'm hopefully about halfway through, maybe a third of the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I hit one big moment sort of doing the audition for Battle of the Bands.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to see more of that. So I'll be checking more of that out. So Goodbye Volcano High, $30. It's just PS5 and PC right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one that's worth checking out for people. And the last one's Power Wash Simulator. They just put out their big 1.4 update that on consoles adds gyro support for the Switch and PS5 and PS4 versions. So that's good. Kind of make the controller support a little bit better. The PS5 version also gets the adaptive triggers and the haptic feedback support, and I guess the speaker stuff. They've added more things to do with that stuff. I usually play with headphones on, so I don't hear any of that. But I've tried the gyro on PS5, and that works pretty well. Finished up the campaign map, the last one there, so I that helped out a lot. I'm trying to see if I can get it working well for the challenges, because that's the last trophies I have, or the ones for getting 1 in 5 gold medals in the challenges. And that was sort of the big issue is like that you're not going to be able to get them really with the analog sticks on there. So I'm needing to redo those because what I was using for the just playing the game, you know, in chill mode essentially is not going to work in the most stressful mode. So I'll need to work on that and make them really just freak out as best as possible. So that's a Power Simulator. I've been playing the new maps they added with the 1.4 updates, the three new maps. I believe it's an excavator, a paintball map, paintball arena, and I forget what the third one is. They added let's see if I can, a Spanish villa.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. I finished up the excavator. It's not too hard. The paintball arena is next. That one cleans up real nice, so that's been fun. Looking forward to finishing that up, but that's been pretty much it. We'll have some more Power Simulator news to talk about here later, but for now, what have you been doing, Brandon?
Well, first and foremost, I finally finished Blasphemous 2. That game is now over and done with. If you want to see my review for it, it's on smashpad.com as we speak. I liked it. It was pretty good. It was very fun, very entertaining. It was hard as balls, though. If I had one really major issue with it, it's that some of its art direction was a little more, I guess, pulled back than it was in the first game. The first game had these spectacularly huge boss fights with these spectacularly huge bosses, and you don't really get a lot of that in these games. I mean, there's still bosses, yeah, and there are a lot of them, and they're still very challenging, but you don't really get a whole bunch of, like, the big, huge ones that, like, fill up the whole screen. But, yeah, I will say this one definitely, some of its world building was a little better. It was overall, it was a great game. It was better in some parts than the first, but also not as well as the first in some other areas. It definitely improved on some things while kind of going backwards on some others. But I recommend it, and I'm pretty sure, like, at some point there's going to be some DLC that's going to come out that'll probably also have, like, an alternate canon ending that'll probably tie into Blasphemous 3, because I am almost certain they're going to make one. But honestly, that's not important, because what is important is that I finally fucking got to play Baldur's Gate 3 last night. Finally. On my PS5, because as I have said before, if I tried to play it here on my laptop, it would explode. I bought the Deluxe Edition, which amongst other things meant that I could play the game a couple of days earlier than people who bought the regular one. So there's that. But yeah, I'm probably not telling you anything new, Chris, because you've definitely gotten further in this game than I have. But
yeah,
you can either pick an origin character, or you can make an original one, which is what I did. I made a Dragonborn Bard because I don't know. I saw a dragon. I was like, oh, he looks cool. I'm gonna be him, and there we go. Simple as that. Well, yes, I do play Argonians in Skyrim. Why do you ask? But anyway. And basically what happens is you end up waking up on a giant in D&D lore, it's called a spelljammer. Although this one, I think it's called like a Nautila or something like that, but it's spelljammer. In D&D, spelljammers are basically like their fantasy version of like outer space, wherein instead of having, like, mechanical spaceships, they have, like, magical ships that can, like, break through reality. And it just so happens that Mind Flayers have a bunch of them, and you end up waking up on one. Because at some point, when this particular one decided to open up over Baldur's Gate, yes, that's the city, it ended up getting you at some point. You end up waking up, and the first thing you end up seeing is a Githyanki woman, who you will later find out her name is Lysiel, getting one of the Mind Flayer's tadpoles crawling over her eye and into her skull. It is not a pleasant thing to watch. And then they do that to you. And then at some point, a Githyanki raiding party shows up behind the Spelljammer, riding a bunch of red dragons, and they manage to damage it enough that it ends up crashing. Well, it's in the middle of crashing when you wake up. And then you can free Laziel and also free another person named, what's her name? Storm Shadow? Storm Cloud? I'm bad with names in this game. Yeah, the human woman.
Shadowheart?
Yeah, Shadowheart. God damn. God. Yeah.
It's not a distinctive name.
No, but yeah, I ended up freeing her, so we ended up having, you know, three people to go against. And basically what you're trying to do is to make your way to the helm of the ship so that you can maybe get it so that it won't explode in midair and kill everyone on board, which is what you do. But as it's happening, you also see a bunch of fiends from the, from Avernum, you know, the one of the hell realms in Forgotten Realms show up. And that basically distracts some of the mind flayers long enough that you can get to the helm. And you kind of manage to get control of it, but it also ends up crashing against a cliff and before it finally just goes down and hits at the middle of the Sword Coast. And so you wake up, you get there, you find Shadowheart, you also find Laziel, although I kind of had to hunt for her a little bit. And you eventually come across another guy named Asterion, who is a very pale, white-haired elf who is definitely a vampire, and he's not really doing a good job hiding it, but yeah. And he's just the cattiest bitch I've ever come across in a game, so I was like, oh yeah, I gotta get this guy in my party. And so you end up, you're like, okay, we gotta find out where we are, and eventually you come across this refugee camp that has taken refuge next to a druid circle, I think it is. Being attacked by a raiding party made up of goblins, and you end up, you know, fighting and finishing the goblins, or, you know, at least chasing a bunch of them off so that, you know, you've got some time and go in. You find out that this whole refugee camp is made up mostly of tieflings. And if you're not familiar with what tieflings are, if you're not a D&D person, tieflings are basically a race of humanoids that were touched by the infernal, but they are not themselves evil. They just look like the classic, you know, horned devil stereotype. And they're basically fleeing from, I think, what I'm pretty sure is like a raiding party from this group called like the Cult of the Absolute. And you come across some of these people early on. They're basically, they're part of this cult under this deity that is a goddess, at least that's what they claim it is. Trying to conquer everything or whatever. And I'm in the middle of the part where I'm trying to go to the goblin camp to try and get this older druid to try and come back and talk and sense into the temporary leader of the druids because she wants to ethnically cleanse the tieflings from the druid area. And that's where I stopped last night. So yeah, sound familiar?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So yeah, game is a ton of fun, all off right off the bat. Obviously, I know that I'm dealing with a degree of sort of having to deal with the degree with the controls a bit because again, this is a PC game that's, you know, being ported over to consoles with controller based, you know, playing and went over a game that is, you know, mostly made for like mouse and keyboard. Honestly, it's not that difficult to navigate if you know what you're doing. They have sort of taken it to using like a multiple radial menus that you can easily get to by just, you know, pressing the R or L switch. You can easily get to the map by just, you know, hitting the, you know, the giant space trigger or whatever it is that's in the middle of the controller. And, you know, that's also where you can get your journal and, you know, where all your equipment and stuff and character stats and all that, you know. I will, of course, remind people that as far as, like, combat is concerned, the actual combat is not terribly different from, like, most other, computer RPGs, you know. The only difference is that because, you know, there's like spells and stuff involved, occasionally you have to come up with, you know, skill checks and stuff like that. And in fact, skill checks are all over this game. If you want to try and take, you know, if you want to, you know, insinuate something or use your charisma or your skills or whatever, or try to make like some big sort of leap of faith action, you have to do a skill check. And you're not always going to get it. Pretty early on, I apparently did really well with the skill checks. I was just acing them, and then all of a sudden, I just kept coming up with duds. So, yeah. As far as graphics are concerned, the game looks amazing. Obviously, it's not to the type of extreme graphical fidelity that a lot of like modern games are, but it still looks pretty gorgeous, and it's got a lot of amazing detail. And honestly, Larian Studios really has to be complimented on the fact that they almost seamlessly were able to sort of mix the, you know, isometric view top down to, you know, regular like behind first person view, and able to switch between all three of them flawlessly without any graphical hiccups at all. I have seen like here and there occasions where like some facial textures are still clear, but they're also slightly kind of muddy. Not like to the extent that like they could be in like Cyberpunk 2077 when it first came out, but like it's still like the textures are still not completely finished. Like they're 85 to 95% finished loading, but they're still going. But other than that, like that's the only issue I found. Everything else is fucking astonishing and great. So yeah, I'm playing Baldur's Gate 3 finally. It is as amazing as everyone had been saying it is. So yeah, that's what I've been playing.
All right, so let's start getting to the news.
Mm-hmm.
With the new month, we've got one subscription service with monthly games.
Mm-hmm.
Still around here with PlayStation Plus since this is the end of Games with Gold. So that won't be happening anymore. So yeah, for the monthly games here, we've got three here. First up, Saints Row, PS5 and PS4. That's an okay game at this point, after all the updates. So an auspicious time to make this sort of deal, as we'll talk about a little bit later here for that. So yeah, that's... the lone PS5 game here for this month. For the PS4, there's Black Desert Traveler Edition. This is an MMO that is in the Elder Scrolls Online vein of you don't need to pay a monthly fee. You just pay for, you know, one of these editions, and you get to play the game as much as you want from then on. Yeah, the Traveler Edition, let's see, the travel item pack, let's see, is a bundle of the base game and multiple add-ons. I don't know what add-ons it comes with, so you'll get some extra stuff there.
Yeah, let me Saints, yeah, okay, yeah, I see what it is. All right,
yeah, it's kind of a more action oriented MMO.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's like DMC or anything, but
mm-hmm.
It's more action-oriented. Okay, includes, let's see, a value pack. I don't know what that includes. It says 15 days, so I'm guessing mm-hmm. you get bonuses for 15 days of playing it.
Mm-hmm.
Pearl box, a polar bear, horse emblem, trainer's flute. You know, if you're going to make an MMO with a bunch of stuff in it, you should explain it instead of...
Yeah, seriously.
It's like, is the polar bear a mount? It's mm-hmm. like, possibly, but I'm not going to Google anymore to find out what is all in that. Maybe there's a wiki page that tells you what's in it, but I don't know. So, yeah, there you go. You get some extra stuff in it. Nothing amazing, but the MMO is pretty decent for what it is. And then Generation Zero, this is a game I think is published by Avalanche Studio, or maybe it was published by them. I remember them being involved in this in some form. It's a different studio at this point. Because, yeah, they've been putting out a bunch of stuff since then. But it's a first-person open-world adventure game set in the world. Let's see. It's in the open world of 1980s Sweden, but instead of, like, say, the Chinese invading, it's robots.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of deadly machine enemies, big giant mechs, and, you know, more humanoid mechs or robots and such. So you're trying to deal with all that. But it's got, I assume, your typical, like, Far Cry RPG stuff to it and all that. So, yeah, there's a bunch of DLC for this. A couple things that are free, I think, but a lot of it's just cosmetic stuff and unlocking some other weapons and such. So I guess you could go for that if you want, but probably best to try it out. It's a game I've been thinking about on Steam that goes on sale for, like, $5 all the time. But I'm like, oh, maybe that would be interesting, and then never got around to buying it. So, yeah, there you go. Decent month, nothing really amazing, but they did include some extra information here at the end, saying that starting September 6th, they will be increasing the price for PlayStation Plus 12-month subscriptions globally across all benefit plans.
Mm-hmm.
So they are increasing the price of the 12-month tiers, not the 1 month or 3 months, I think is the other one that they offer. So that, let's see, for the essential tier, which is $60 at the moment, will be increasing to $80. Let's see, extra, I believe is $100 for 12 months, is increasing to $134.99. And premium, which is $120, is increasing to $159.99. Pretty big increases here, about 25 to like 33%, I think, here. Yeah, disappointing, but not too surprising, because the monthly cost difference between, you know, the single month at a time versus a 12-month subscription has been kind of wildly in favor of just paying for a year at a time. I guess for premium, it was $120, which is $10 a month, versus I think if you were paying monthly for premium, it was like $17 or $18.
Mm-hmm.
So you're paying like twice as much. Same for essential was literally that, because it was $60, so about $5 a month for paying for a year up front versus paying $10 a month for the monthly option kind of thing. And yeah, $100 would be like $8, maybe $9 per month versus $134.99, which I think is about $12-13 there. So on the monthly side, it's not too bad, but also I've only renewed my stuff here for discounts, so I'll just continue doing that for when those come up. So it's not too big of a deal for me, but yeah, definitely feel for the people that don't always subscribe to these things outside of deal periods. So hopefully we continue to get those, and hopefully see more high quality stuff here. As they do mention, the price adjustment will enable us to continue bringing high quality games and value added benefits to your PlayStation Plus subscription service. So hopefully we can see, you know, maybe a better improvement on some of that stuff. So we've been getting plenty of games, but not always the most amazing games, especially for new stuff. If they're going to do more like what we got this month with, or last month with Sea of Stars and Moving Out 2 being out at launch for PS Plus members, that kind of thing would be nice to see more of. Especially if Sony puts their own stuff on there sooner. If not, it doesn't seem like they're going to do day one, but if they do it sooner, that would be nice for the people that wait on that stuff. But yeah, this is just what every subscription service is doing at this point, is increasing prices. It's like, what, Disney Plus is like twice as much as it used to be around when the pandemic started. It was like $6 or $7, and now it's $14, I think. It's unfortunately what's going on with all these subscription services. especially if you're getting cable, internet cable. So that's always going up because I think Disney and ESPN are the biggest ones that push all these live TV companies around, wanting increased prices to cover their costs. And a lot of them are saying no. So, yeah. Disappointing, but unfortunately, it seems like everything is going up in price to make up money on their end.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't seem like it seems like subscription numbers, the amount of people doing this is not really increasing as much for any of these services. It seems like they're all kind of hitting a plateau that the next step would be increasing the price to get more out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing how many people will stick with it versus just kind of let it go.
Mm.
But at least for people doing, you know, 1 or 3 month, your prices are staying the same. No real changes there. But the 1 year has been the good deal for this service. And yeah, kind of a thing that doesn't always happen with subscription services. Like Game Pass, unless you're able to find like 3 month codes and stack those up, you're not getting that much for Game Pass. It's like directly on the console, it's like 1 month at a time. You're not able to procure any higher amounts for a discount.
Mm-hmm.
And the cards are sparse too for that stuff. So if you want to get those, yep. Was the thing where I was looking, like, seeing they used to have like 6 month codes on Amazon, and that hasn't been the case for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like those things go in and out, and it's like, oh, I guess you want to just be the monthly one because that's the highest amount you can get out of people. But as we've seen, like, they're not exactly getting huge numbers out of these services, yeah. So they're just taking to increasing the price to kind of squeeze as much out of people as they can.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. There's your PS Plus news. Some good and some not so good.
Yep.
But here's something we got for free this week. A Nintendo Direct centered around Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
Yep.
We got to see more of this game outside of that weird little teaser trailer that just seemed to make it look really weird. Mm-hmm. And this Direct said, yep, it's really weird. Mm. It's taking place in the Flower Kingdom, not the Mushroom Kingdom, where they have the Wonder Flower. That is sort of a big power-up thing here that just causes lots of weird stuff to happen, depending on the stage.
Yeah.
Things like the pipes just start crawling around like worms, and that can help you get it to other areas more easily. Or like, hey, Mario starts, you know, blowing up like a balloon, so you start floating around more easily. That kind of stuff. Or like, oh, there's a stampede of animals here. All that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, they seem to suggest like those sequences end when you find the Wonder Seed, which is, I guess, how you get the Wonder Flowers. Those are a currency, I guess, in this game as well. Those can open up new areas as well, more challenging areas.
Yep.
So,
also, it sort of goes all in on the whole, you know, drug metaphor that has been following the Super Mario series since day one.
Yeah. definitely has vibes of the touch fuzzy, get dizzy stuff from Yoshi Island.
Oh, so, yeah.
I was like, oh, everything starts getting weird. Who knows what's in this flower? Some powerful hallucinogenic stuff. But yeah, keeping it with the like weird stuff. The only power-up I believe that returns from the previous games is the Fire Flower. I believe everything else is new from that. So there's like a puffy hat that lets you fly around. There's a drill hat that lets you go underground and sort of hide from enemies, but you can also pop up under them. Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff. There's a bunch of stuff like that looks pretty neat from that. The characters you have a pretty big crew, you know, Mario, Luigi, Peach, Daisy. You have two of the Toads, or you have Toad in a couple of variations and Toadette, maybe also a couple variations. You have Yoshi in a number of variations as well, and Nabbit. And they present Yoshi and Nabbit as like the the easy mode if you need that. So there's your accessibility kind of thing there for that, because they can take a little bit of extra damage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, neither's characters take damage from enemies, so they're useful for people who want to play the game with less of a challenge. Yoshis have their flutter jump and swallowing abilities. And yeah, you can even ride Yoshi with the other characters, even if you're another Yoshi, and that's feels like that's a line that they have crossed, that the director of this game should be arrested.
Mm.
Yoshi should not be riding Yoshis. It's it's against nature.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if you saw a horse riding a horse here. You'd be like, nope, something's going wrong here. Get out the guns.
Yep.
We got to stop this.
Mm-hmm.
The Yoshi should not be riding a Yoshi. Then you start getting into the Disney conundrum of, like, what's Goofy and how is he different from Pluto? They're just two different evolutionary paths for the dog species.
Mm-hmm.
Where the ones became the subservient, you know, dog species, and the other ones became people.
Yep.
And nope, we don't need that in the Yoshi land.
Nope.
Yoshi's already pushing it. But yeah, let's see. The Flower Kingdom's got 7 worlds. Yeah, a bunch of different variants. There's like, yeah, Pipe Rock Plateau, Fluff Puff Peaks, Shining Falls, and the Petal Isles, and more that have not been shown off yet. But the map is very much like the map in 3D World.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of run around on it a little bit to get to different areas.
Yeah.
And yeah, they have challenges and all that kind of stuff in there as well. And they also have badges. There's like these extra ability things that can maybe make it easier for you or make it more challenging or give you, he gets like a, almost like a, not a grappling hook, but something, it's like what the Bionic Commando has, lets you like pull yourself up to areas, that kind of stuff. Cause they do talk a lot about, oh, there's some hidden areas around here that you may not be able to see, but there's these talking flowers and they may give you hints at that stuff.
Yeah.
Again, talking flowers, that's, I don't want to be in this kingdom for too long. Flowers with thoughts. That's where they probably suggested the Yoshis, like, hey, what if you ride the other one? So the flowers are the real bad guys here. But they also have some, you know, they have your typical local co-op with up to 4 players. But there's also online stuff as well. There's, I think you can specifically get into a party to play together, but also you can just enable the online mode and see ghost versions of other players and potentially be able to help them out if they get hit. And which I think in here they get into a bubble that you just have to hit.
Yep.
To bring them back versus some of the other games where they get into some weird states and you have to go and find them kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah, it's like standees that you can leave out to help other people out.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. Oh, no, you go in a ghost form. Bubbles was the new Super Mario Brothers Wii, I think. That was where that was introduced. Yeah, so you just go in a ghost form so you can kind of fly around a little bit. Bubble one, you could kind of do the same thing. It's not that much different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can bring them back to life by either touching them or placing a standee.
Mm.
So, yeah, you can buy that in a shop. So you can buy badges and find badges and all this stuff. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on here in this game. And, yeah, they also kind of capped it off announcing a red Switch OLED model.
Mm-hmm.
That is lightly Mario themed in that if you look at the dock on the backside, the little corner piece has a Mario shadow on there. And if you take the back off of the dock, there's some coins on the little power unit in there. That's as much as it's Mario themed.
Mm-hmm.
But that is out October 6th for a typical $349.99 for the OLED model.
Mm-hmm.
The game is out October 20th. You do not get a copy with the Switch, as is tradition for all their models of Switches.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There you go for that. More money to spend on a Switch. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. That game looks neat.
Oh, yeah, it does. It looks quite fun.
Yeah, and that's out the same day as Spider-Man 2. That'll be a hell of a day for games. But let's get to some new releases that are coming out here over the next couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
This one here, I've been looking forward to this for a bit. Nower, mm-hmm. play with your food. Nower is spelled like hour, but with an N on front. This is a cooking game, but it's supposed to be a little bit weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let me see what... it'll be out September 12th for $14.99.
Yeah.
I'll have a 20% discount at launch.
Mm-hmm.
PS5, PS4, and PC. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, an experimental food art game that blends mouthwatering visuals, dynamic beats, and playful exploration.
Mm-hmm.
Unbound by scores, time limit surrealism. Nower invites you to play with your food in a variety of surreal scenes, ranging from chill to unhinged.
Mm.
From a symphony of toasters to a bathtub full of ice cream and far beyond. So I'm excited to see a weird food game.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll be out next week.
All right.
Yeah, next week. Not the week coming up. That's where Starfield is, and all the reviews hit for that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, coming out the next day, September 13th,
mm.
Devolver Digital's Gunbrella is finally releasing. Mm. That was one of the games that was not part of their little direct that was about games getting delayed, so we knew this was coming out this year. It's out pretty soon, September 13th, which I think is next Wednesday. Yeah, next Wednesday. From the same developer as Gato Roboto. Donksoft, that's a good name. Yeah, this is the sort of action game where you have an umbrella that has guns attached to it to do a lot of fun ways of killing enemies and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, this is one of those silly action games that I'm looking forward to. So there you go for that. Switch and PC only right now.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, let's see, September 28th, towards the end of the month, Pizza Possum is out.
Yeah.
And that's an apt title because you are playing as a possum
uh-huh.
who wants pizza.
Yep.
And has to steal it from dogs in this town.
Mm-hmm.
I assume a bunch of different levels. It's like a little bit of an arcadey stealth game of sorts. Mm-hmm. So you're running around this town trying to get pizza, maybe alerting some of these dog enemies. And having to scramble away and hide in bushes or whatever. But trying to get all the pizzas and such. So it looks really neat. And yeah, that's on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, Switch, and PC.
Mm.
So that looks cool. Looking forward to that for indie stuff. Yeah, there's a demo on Steam. Maybe I'll have to check that out to see how it all works right now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's another one, another indie game.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one, Front Mission 2 Remake is hitting the Switch on October 5th.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Switch exclusive for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
But like the first one, it'll probably come to PC and PS4 and PS5 at a later date, probably next year maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is that kind of treatment for Front Mission 2.
Mm-hmm.
Again, another game that probably not many people here played because I don't know that it really released here.
Yeah, I don't think it did. But I think
3 was the first we got.
Yeah, I still need to play the first remake. I'll definitely be playing this after I played that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I am glad this franchise is finally like making its way over here and not with like some shitty, spin-off like what we recently had. So
well, recently is like 10 years ago at this point.
Yeah,
that weird stealth game we tried to make that it's like, oh, this is technically in the Front Mission universe, but
yeah,
nobody would have guessed it.
Nope.
But yeah, that's cool. It'll be $34.99.
mm-hmm.
Yeah, improved loading times, free camera movement, revamped soundtrack, new coloring, camouflage options, and additional languages. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
The first one's been going on sale for a bit,
mm-hmm.
Like 20% off, so it can be had on a discount. So
mm-hmm.
there you go for that. Next up here, another Devolver Digital game,
mm-hmm.
Wizard with a Gun, finally has a date, October 17th for $24.99 for PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. Switch will be at a later date. Let's see. Yeah, PC demo's out now. This is a very cool game from when I played the demo. Yeah, kind of a sandbox survival game of sorts where you're kind of running out to do some missions, collect some materials, and running back to your base to mm-hmm. use those materials to improve things there, add new areas that let you, you know, upgrade guns or salvage them for materials to use for other guns or improve abilities, all that kind of stuff. A little bit of like Hades, but if the if you're doing more of a survival game, because I believe the big story thing is like you are going back to the real world where it's like X amount of time before like the big disaster hits that destroys the world. Mm-hmm. So you need to kind of get back before that to, you know, use your materials and all that for your craft and whatnot. So
mm-hmm.
It's a very cool hook to it.
Yep.
So I'm looking forward to this. I played the demo and it seems really neat
mm-hmm.
For that stuff. So yeah, there you go.
Yep.
Awesome. October 17th. So,
mm-hmm.
Now we're into November.
Yep. Getting closer to the holidays.
Yeah. And speaking of holidays, Ebenezer in the Invisible World is mm-hmm. launching November 3rd. This is the Metroid-like inspired by Charles Dickinson's A Christmas Carol.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially a sequel.
Yeah.
Where after he has, you know, come to his revelations that he needs to change his ways, mm-hmm. has arrived to the outside world and runs into things not going well around him. It's sort of a reimagined Victorian fantasy
mm-hmm.
World where like people are on strike, wanting better pay and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But he is trying to fight join Ebenezer Scrooge and a team of spectral allies because he can see the ghosts now because he's seen the three the three ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future. Mm-hmm. So now you can see any ghost because mm-hmm. sure. Yeah, they are battling to save London from the clutches of the wealthy industrialist Caspar Malthus and his militant private guard.
Yeah.
Ghosts can be, you know, can just give you quests and such,
mm-hmm.
As well as maybe unlock stuff. I'm not 100% sure all on that.
Mm-hmm.
But the demo I played seemed pretty neat, pretty solid. One of these games with an interesting premise of, you know, playing as Ebenezer Scrooge.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to stop the rich billionaires from ruining the world. Which, hell, we need some of those games. So, yeah, there you go. This is mm-hmm. a neat one. This will be PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC
mm-hmm.
on November 3rd. Trying to see if there's any other information here. I don't think so. I think that's it. But you can check a demo out on Steam if you want to see that in action. So, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting game to look at.
Yep.
And let's see. Next up here, there's going to be hardware coming out in November. Mm-hmm. It's the PlayStation Portal remote play device that you can check out. So you can pre-order now on the PlayStation Direct site. They say here September 29th. You'll be able to pre-order at other select retailers in much of the U.S. and Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So you can check that out. If you want to pre-order locally versus online, you can do that at a later date in a couple weeks. So $199. So yeah, mm-hmm. you can check it out. I'll be sitting this out and letting people do what they want here. So, and yeah, So here you go. That's really all there is to it. I don't think any of us are getting it. But yeah, let's see. Next up, we got a delay. The Suikoden 1 and 2 HD remaster Gate Rune and Dunin Unification Wars has been delayed out of 2023.
Yeah.
It'll be out sometime next year, probably, but they didn't really put much of a of any sort of time frame for it.
Yeah.
Did put out a tweet with a message saying, "We have reached the conclusion that despite the very best efforts and our dedicated development staff to release the remasters in 2023, additional time is needed to ensure the quality, performance, and gameplay experience our users deserve. The entire Suikoden team is renewing our efforts to bring Suikoden 1 and 2 HD remaster to release as soon as is possible." So, yeah.
All right.
Sure, take your time. Don't want to do what most of these games have been, which is not good. It's one of those series where it's like, the first two are generally held up as the best, and then...
Yeah, it just kind of went downhill after.
Yeah, it's like, some fans like, you know, some of the later stuff, but generally I don't see anybody that's like, these are all good games. They're like, I like one and two and like four, and then it's like, okay. So yeah. There you go for that. That's it for any date stuff, but we do have... Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2 finally getting some concrete information of what the hell's going on. Particularly that it is now in development at the Chinese Room. Makers of Dear Esther and a bunch of other games. They've shipped stuff, so that's more than what the previous studio had done.
Definitely.
So they seem to be suggesting that they will have this out by the end of fall 2024, which is like, I wouldn't put any dates on this, but okay, good luck with that. The seems like they're no longer planning PS4 and Xbox One versions for this, just sticking to PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. So there's that. Yeah, from what I've heard, the Chinese Room has been hiring a lot of people, building up to work on this game. A lot of people that come from a bunch of big studios, so should hopefully have the people and the talent to pull this off, and be the ones to finish this game. So there you go. Hopefully that all works out. So yeah, I think this is one that you've been looking forward to, Brandon, but dealing with the futility of every update.
Yeah, I kind of lost my enthusiasm, to be honest.
Yeah, they got a year to get it back. Because then they can actually work on it and, you know, show you that it exists. For that. So yeah, that's that one. That's a game you can look forward to next year. Maybe. We'll see. But for something that's actually concrete, Power Wash Simulator. Water and concrete and dirt and wood and all that. They've announced their next paid expansion. It is Back to the Future. Which, if you've seen the story of the campaign, that fits perfectly in there. Because let's just say time travel is a thing in this game. And if you're wondering how the hell that's a thing, you know, a part of the story of a power washing game, I'll play the game. But yeah, they are going to have five maps in this. Doc Brown's van from the beginning of the game, of the first one, the time machine, the DeLorean. So that's cool. The Hill Valley Clock Tower, which is, you know, primarily featured in all three movies. The Holomax Theater, which is that, it's where the big CG shark pops out of in the second movie. And then Doc's Time Train. So we'll get another train to clean. But this one will be pretty fun. For that, so that's the from all three movies, a bunch of stuff there, 10 new achievements. So that's cool. $8 when it launches. This will probably be in the next month or two, they'll announce a date. Because yeah, the Warhammer stuff they announced a while ago did not even have any sort of concrete details to it. It's just like, we're doing Warhammer later. And this one has a lot more details to it that tells me it's going to be out in the next month or so. So yeah, $8 for it. Like the SpongeBob thing, probably be pretty easy achievements for that. So that'll be out on everything at some point here later this year. So there you go. More story stuff with Back to the Future. And yeah, definitely hope we get that, the Darth Vader suit.
Oh, yeah.
First one, the big hazmat suit that seems like it would fit pretty well with all this. Oh, there's screenshots. I didn't even see these.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, there's the Jaws 19, which we didn't get there. I think we got, what, 4 Jaws movies?
Mm-hmm.
There was a 3D movie as well. So you could throw in, you know, the Meg and the Sharknado's Jaws movies, because they essentially are. They just found the next level. Okay, yeah, there's the train. Mm-hmm. There's the DeLorean. So, yeah.
Yeah.
They got these different places. Oh, you go inside the clock tower. Holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
Unprecedented. We've never seen inside the clock tower.
Yep.
So that's cool. So, yeah, there you go. That's fun. I'm looking forward to that. And let's end on the worst news of the week.
Yep.
The Embracer Group has shut down.
Yep.
Volition Games.
Uh-huh.
And they announced this during the time frame where everybody was going nuts about Starfield reviews.
Yep.
To kind of hide it here.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, that's... they also announced it that day because that was August 31st, so...
Mm-hmm.
The healthcare plans all the people had,
yeah,
would end that day, and not, you know, mm-hmm. if they tried to bury it on Friday night, at least they would have kept their healthcare plans for the rest of September. But no,
mm-hmm.
ended it that day for that. So it's some of that stuff. But yeah, this is all sort of the results of Embracer's $2 billion deal with the Saudis that fell mm-hmm. through, and as a result, they have to. Shut down or slim down a bunch of studios and cancel games and all that kind of stuff. We've gotten a couple of bits of stuff that's been announced on that front.
Mm-hmm.
One was like a studio that just got formed to work on a game for them. That got shut down, but Volition's been a part of the industry for about 30 years. They just recently celebrated their 30th anniversary. Also celebrated the 17th anniversary of the Saints Row franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty recently, there's sort of a ghoulish part of their website where you see like them celebrating 30 years, and the next one was about them shutting down with them not being able to put a thumbnail image in there. It's mm-hmm. just like image here kind of thing. It's like, oh, this is how this is going down. They've put out a statement saying the Volition team has proudly created world-class entertainment for fans around the globe for 30 years. We've been driven by passion for our community and always work to deliver joy, surprise, and delight. This past June, Embracer Group announced a restructuring program to strengthen Embracer and maintain its position as a leader in the video game industry. As part of that program, they evaluated strategic and operational goals and made the difficult decision to close Volition effective immediately.
Mm-hmm.
To help our team, we are working to provide job assistance and help smooth the transition for our Volition family members. Mm-hmm. We thank our customers and fans around the world for all the love and support over the years. You'll always be in our hearts. And yeah, this is a big blow for just the general history of the industry. They've been around since 1993, where they were known as Parallax Software.
Mm-hmm.
Made the big sci-fi first-person shooter Descent. So that was a big part of their legacy. They were named after Split in 1996. And yeah, got acquired by THQ. Around when they were making the original Red Faction games. They also made the Space Combat Sim Free Space, as well as the fantasy RPG Summoner. And then went on to make Saints Row around the launch of the Xbox 360. They released that like that following summer.
Mm.
As they were sort of doing a parody clone of GTA.
Yep.
Sort of based off of the ridiculous stuff they were doing with... San Andreas.
Yeah.
As GTA 4 is looking to be more realistic and grounded. That first one's okay, but it's with like Saints Row 2 that it starts to find its foothold as a game.
Yeah.
And obviously the third is sort of the peak of the series.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, their history, like, people are like, oh, the last Saints Row didn't do well, so of course this happened. It's like, I guess, but also, you know, they're not being shut down for that. They're being shut down because Embracer fucked up this deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like Lars Wing of Fours is going down because of the fucked up deal.
Mm-hmm.
He might even own a majority of stock to keep himself in position of power.
Yep.
But it's like Saints Row released in that point because Embracer Group and the heads of, I think Deep Silver was the branch of the company they were in at that point. You'll say, like, this is okay. We can deal with this. This game in this state, and it released in a very poor state.
Mm.
Got a bunch of updates over the past year or so to make it better, but it's not enough to make it a good game.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, they waited until they just released it on Steam, where it's like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, it was only on Epic Games Store, so that probably helped limit sales a little bit. You know, and they just announced that they were going to put it on PlayStation Plus for September. Mm-hmm. Then you kill the studio, so that's cool to do. So now it's like, oh, this is a memorial of sorts, because obviously they've gone through a lot of turmoil. Just go look at the history of their releases,
mm-hmm.
And then the last couple of years of THQ's mm-hmm. Various financial failures, and you'll see that they basically needed their games to do super well.
Yeah.
To save the company. And of course, those games were not the sort of games that would save a failing company.
Mm-hmm.
That was just bleeding money.
Definitely.
Especially because I saw quotes from people that were like, oh yeah, the Red Faction Guerrilla and Red Faction Armageddon just tanked. They lost THQ a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, I've played like pretty much all the Red Faction games. Red Faction Guerrilla actually is pretty fun. Like, it's legitimately a lot of fun, but it just didn't sell well. And then Armageddon basically underwent the same like thing. Like, it was, you remember that really shitty Dead Space 3? Yeah, Armageddon was very much like that. It made no sense, and it had like a bunch of design choices that were obviously meant to be cash grabs, and it failed utterly.
Yeah, it seemed like a game that was trying to harken back to the original games, which were more corridor shooters.
Yeah.
Where you could just shoot into the wall to get to other areas.
Yeah, which, I mean, that was the original game selling point.
Yeah. You know,
the
geomod tech.
Yeah.
But with Guerrilla, they're like, hey, what if we do this in an open world? That might be more engaging. And it was.
You could basically take apart entire buildings with a sledgehammer. It was amazing.
Yeah. It was arguably its biggest selling point, and you were annoyed when you had to do just general open world missions.
Yeah.
Of shooting dudes where you're like, okay, this is okay, but I want to blow apart these buildings.
Yeah.
And then Armageddon, they're like, what if we put you back in, like, closed corridors?
Mm.
And you had to deal with the destruction stuff in that. It's like, that's not that fun.
Mm-mm. And they had, like, another franchise they could have worked on, which is Free Space. Free Space is fantastic. And they basically didn't touch it after Free Space 2.
Yeah, I'm not sure who owns that at this point. Let me see if I can find that out, but yeah, let's see. Oh, Descent Free Space. Okay. Mm-hmm. That was a spinoff of Descent.
Yeah. But most people just call it Free Space.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, it's like a big space shooter sim thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of neat, but I wonder who owns that property.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, when the THQ stuff was going down, when they went and filed for bankruptcy, they started auctioning off stuff, and Deep Silver bought Volition and Saints Row came with them, but they lost Red Faction to one Nordic Games. It would become THQ Nordic because the in one of the following rounds, probably the last round, they bought up essentially the, all the remaining assets of THQ, which I think included Free Space and Summoner, that kind of stuff. But they also got Fred Faction. And so it wasn't until that was like 2013, 2014. And it wasn't until 2018 when then THQ Nordic bought Deep Silver that they were in the same company with the rest of their properties, but they didn't transfer over those properties to the Deep Silver subsidiary until I think March 2022 or 2020. During the pandemic, they finally did that. So, yeah, it's like Volition's been in a state of having to save their parent company from falling apart for like 15 years at this point.
It's disgusting.
Because literally Armageddon came out, did not sell well. And if you go look this up, THQ literally announced like, we're done with this franchise. We're not doing another Red Faction game. You know, which obviously annoyed people. Because also in the middle of that, they were doing a sci-fi original movie based on Red Faction that was set between, I think, Guerrilla and Armageddon.
And see, Red Faction could 100% work as a movie franchise.
Yeah.
It's got great, it's got good enough like themes and world building that it could totally work.
Yeah. But then they also made like a little vehicle combat shooter.
Yeah.
That's from a different company, different developer. I forget which one, but it's like that didn't do so well because the game one, nobody public, you know, nobody purchased. So the multiplayer is, you know, a nothing thing. And I remember that having not much of a campaign in there. So it was like, oh, this is like a multiplayer thing, but nobody bought it. So it's a dead game out at launch. So it's like you wasted money on that. And
yeah,
Saints Row the Third came out at the same time they released the UDraw tablet on PS3 and Xbox 360, which failed huge, cost them like $100 million to do that. And that's like the death blow.
Yeah.
Because Saints Row the Third did really well. Was a huge hit for them, but not enough to counter, you know, losing $100 million in a very stupid deal because they essentially made way too many of those tablets for the audience that didn't exist on those platforms.
Yep.
Barely existed on the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
For the level of games they were making. So
mm-hmm.
They went and got bankrupted 1 year later, December 2012. And, you know, that's where they got purchased by Koch Media, which turned into Deep Silver, then turned into now PlayOn as part of the Embracer Group. And so, yeah, Deep Silver had their own issues. As far as Volition, they made Saints Row 4, which did pretty well. And then Ancients of Mayhem, which did not do well. But yeah, Deep Silver bought, I forget what the what I had read. They bought up the new, I forget what the games were. I'll just look it up. Because yeah, it's the thing where I was like, oh, this is why they were kind of not doing well. Yeah, Homefront the Revolution from THQ. Which Homefront did pretty well, just as like, oh, this is like, you know, the movie thing, but, you know, you get to play it. It's okay for that. The second game just was terrible. Did not do very well for that, so that helped tank their financials with all that. And, like, made them cheaper to for, you know, a THQ Nordic to swing in and buy it.
Yep.
Yeah, because that was a Crytek game before the THQ bankruptcy stuff happened. So they exited that product to work on other things. And then that whole thing happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, they tried to buy the, they bought the Time Splitters rights. And it was like, oh, they're going to make a new one of those and have Crytek work on it. And it's like, that never happened.
Nope.
So yeah, that's kind of whole thing there.
Mm-hmm.
Try to deal with some of these other, but yeah. And yeah, THQ Nordic has, you know, very much been since then like, hey, we've got all these great games. We're going to do remasters and make those great. Mm. And that'll make easy money. And then a lot of those did not do very well because they just weren't, they did not invest the time and money to make them, you know, great versions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even anything like, you know, what you get out of Digital Clips or Square Enix's remasters, even though as you miss those can be, but when they hit, they are light years beyond a lot of the remasters we've gotten here out of THQ Nordic and the and Embracer Group. So
yeah,
it's like they're an IP farm now, and Deep Silver's Twitter account was very much like, oh, don't worry about Saints Row and, you know, Red Faction. Mm. It's like, people don't care about those franchises as much as you shutting down the people that made them.
Yeah.
Even if they've had a lot of turnover over the years because of obvious reasons that people not wanting to deal with ownership groups that seem to keep failing over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, again, don't be victim blaming here. We're saying like, oh, they released, you know, so many bombs in a row. It's like, that's not technically their fault that a lot of that stuff happened. It's expectations for things. So Saints Row is sort of the first big original game coming out of the Embracer Group's big studios, and they had to get it out as soon as they could instead of letting it percolate a little longer.
Yeah.
And I believe I've read some that they meddled with it because they were going to maybe be aiming more for a Saints Row 2 style story and attitude to the game, but went with what they had now, and it's like, yeah, you just made a game that's kind of a generic open world game.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but expecting people to pay 60 or 70 bucks for that, it's not going to go over too well, especially when it's very buggy because it released way earlier than it should have.
Yep.
So yeah, it's like a lot of meddling from various companies here that just kind of undermined this very talented studio, where like Saints Row the Third was a game that was, you know, game of the year at a lot of places. And they made other games. Saints Row 4 was very good. There's Gat in Hell, which was not bad. That was a different studio, I believe. So it's an unfortunate bit of history that's being lost. And now they're just a footnote in the IP vault that is Embracer Group. So maybe they'll bring those back at some point, but it won't be with the people that made those franchises what they were.
Yeah, definitely.
And especially as they were also planning to do like a an actual fix of Saints Row 2 for PC, because that is an infamously bad PC port on Steam. That unfortunately doesn't have any like language on it to be like, hey, this, maybe don't buy this. Not without maybe some mods or whatever, and they were going to work on that, and like had like a couple of people that were working on it in their spare time. Like one of them died, unfortunately, and unfortunately everybody else got laid off that could potentially have worked on that. And Embracer Group has no reason to do that instead of just do a new remaster if they want. That might be bad as well, but who knows? But yeah, the shine of what Embracer Group was representing over the past like 4 or 5 years has really worn off, and shows them for just the money farm that they are. Of, you know, collecting all of these IPs and holding them hostage from the studios that own them. And now if their numbers go below a certain line, they can all get shut down at any point and you lose all the talented people there. I'm sure some of these Volition people will get opportunities to move to other companies, but, you know, that's a whole questionable thing, especially because Volition's in Illinois, not necessarily near a ton of other studios, though there are some in and around Chicago, like NetherRealm Studios and Iron Galaxy, that are, probably would love to recruit some people there from Volition, so hopefully they find better places to work that won't put them on the chopping block constantly. So, yeah, there you go. The unfortunate way that this show ends this week, but
yeah,
Volition's one of those studios that was a very bright star in the industry from like 2008 to like 2012.
Mm-hmm. They had a storied history. It goes all the way back to the golden age of PC gaming.
Yeah. That's, you know, their games were some of the notable releases on the PS2 at launch. Mm-hmm. Some of it was right there. I did not realize it was a Volition game until fairly recently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, this is a studio with a lot more going on than you would think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you wouldn't think Naughty Dog's been around for almost 40 years, but mm-hmm. they have been. And that's a remarkable thing, even if, you know, they missed every once in a while. It's like
mm-hmm.
every studio does that. It's hard to make constant hits, especially when it's relating to the fluctuating and fickle taste of fans. So I think that's where we're going to end it this week, hopefully with some better news next week.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thank you to Brandon for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and games to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, as we enter September and start the fall holiday gaming season, as the releases, the waves just smash into us constantly.
To
drown us in a well of capitalism here.
Mm-hmm.
To keep us from having money for very long.
Yep.
So, yeah.
We already have Halloween stuff being set up in the grocery store where I work at, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers. Mm-hmm. Who would not expect you to buy ridiculous 13-foot-tall skeletons and shit like that?
Yeah, seriously.
Halloween is getting a weird scale mm-hmm. problem. People saw the giant skeleton at Home Depot that people goofed on. Mm. And they're like, we need bigger than that.
Yeah.
Like I saw Amazon has weird blow up thing of a skeleton mounting another one to have sex. Mm. I'm like, why does this exist?
Wait, repeat that.
It's skeletons about to fuck. I'll post you an image here of it.
Yeah.
So you can see what I'm talking.
I kind of don't want to, and yet my curious, oh God. Yeah, why?
Yeah, the comment here is what I need the neighborhood trick-or-treaters to know, first and foremost, is that in this house, the skeletons fuck.
See, that doesn't even make sense on the surface, because they don't even, you know what, I'm not going to even think of honoring this with trying to put logic to it. It's just stupid.
We don't kink shame here on Day Zero Update.
Oh, go fuck yourself.
So thank you all for tuning in. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.